I mean, there are still captive dolphins and orcas all over the U.S., but I think the future of that industry has definitely been shrunken by laws and regulations that have been passed, and even public image, I think.
Off-gassing, a scuba podcast with host Nick Hogle. Most who participate in adventures beneath the surface would agree that every little bit helps when it comes to ocean conservation. Max Kushner earned a degree in marine science and is an active scuba instructor in Hawaii. Taking to social media to inform, educate, and spread awareness about conservation efforts, he quickly gained an audience and has been using his platform for good. I sit down with Max to hear about his open water certification in California, the process of earning a marine science degree, local diving, shark conservation, becoming an instructor, and much more. Please enjoy. Max, how are you doing? It's this evening for you, correct?
Yeah, it's about 7 p.m. for me right now.
Oh, nice, man. Did you get out in the water today?
No, today's like my only day off for pretty much the entire week. Every other day of the week, I'm diving.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, cool, man. I'm excited to hear more about it. And my first question is, tell me how and why you got into scuba diving. Tell me about that first breath underwater, what led to that moment. I always like to ask because sometimes it's, you know, people, it's love at first breath, or some people are like, I absolutely hated everything about this, but I kept going. So I'm always interested to hear about that first breath.
So I had gotten certified back in 2018 in high school. Actually, I was a junior and I got really lucky. My school kind of worked out that if you didn't have a sixth period in the day, it was only six periods in the day. So if you didn't have that last class, they would let you do scuba diving for like $250. Saw a flyer by the pool. I ended up signing up for the class, and California water is absolutely freezing. And learning how to dive there, like having to do skills and taking your mask off and your reg out, it sucked in cold water for me. So like pool sessions, I was doing okay. I was kind of nervous. Like I've always loved the ocean since I was like five. I'd snorkeled before, but I was nervous the first time I went underwater and breathing, and it's unnatural kind of when you start, which is kind of, I use that when I teach. I get that. I think it's important to get that. So I kind of almost flunked my open water course because first ocean dive, I couldn't really descend because when I would, the cold water would touch my face, I would start like breathing all weird. I'd go, I couldn't get a full breath in. So I started kind of panicking at the surface, and my instructor told me to take my mask off, put my face in the water, and I ended up getting down. I got through the course, and I finally got my open water cert, and I kind of didn't really dive a ton after that. I did my four dives, and then it was about a 6 or 7 month break until my senior year of high school, and I ended up doing my advanced through another class. Actually, this was an actual environmental AP environmental science class, and we got to do a research project for my advanced course, which was really cool. We went out to Catalina on a liveaboard for 4 or 5 days, and we lived on the boat. We were doing four dives a day, and we picked a project. We had everything lined out beforehand, and I got to do like transect surveys for invertebrates and rocky versus sandy substrates as part of my advanced at Catalina Island, which was really actually a pretty cool opportunity, and that kind of set the track for me to go do marine biology in college, which is kind of cool.
Oh, awesome, man. Awesome. So I'm assuming Southern California?
Yeah. I used to live in Huntington Beach. So like my high school had a surf team. We did scuba diving, like a whole bunch of stuff. So it was a really good place to learn how to dive. I used to surf all the time. So like I was in the water and I really wanted to get certified. So I took the opportunity.
So I've been to Huntington a few times. I remember really enjoying it every time I went down there. But I lived in Big Bear Lake for about, I think, like 5 or 6 years. So we would make it down to obviously like L.A. quite a bit. I had a buddy who had a shop there. So not a dive shop. Oh, it was nice. A motorcycle shop. But
Yeah.
We would. I wasn't a diver at this point in my life. And but yeah, I do. At times miss Southern California. It's been a while since I've been back there, but I still have some friends back there. Through my 20s, did the snowboard thing and ended up in Big Bear Lake, which was, oddly enough, I was in Colorado and then I was like kind of getting over the cold. And I had a friend moving to Big Bear and I went and visited him out there and I was like, man, this is kind of nice. Like, I can still snowboard, but I got the beach this way. I got the desert this way. California has a lot to offer for sure.
California was a nice place to be able to, like, grow up and go do stuff. And, I mean, you could do pretty much everything you want there.
So when you decided to do your advanced course, you were doing that within, like, a class. What made you pursue the further education to go towards rescue and then eventually instructor, right?
Yeah. So I was taking this AP environmental science class and for a long time, I've known that I really wanted to go do marine biology in college, and environmental science class gave me the opportunity to kind of get, I guess, research experience before college, and using diving to be able to do that was really cool opportunity. We got to do like a whole poster. When you do a study or you're presenting it somewhere, you'll get like this big poster. You can present like your introduction, your methods, your results, statistics, like all that stuff. So we had to do like graphs, got this whole poster, got everything blown up, and we actually got to present all the research. I had wanted to continue my diving education. I kind of read about the course and like doing a night dive, doing a deep dive, kind of expanding all of my skills and where I could go as a diver. It really interested me because I had a much bigger long-term goal for diving. And at the time, I didn't even know what a dive master was. Like I had no clue that going the professional route was an option. I just knew that I enjoyed it. It made me happy and that I was going to need it for my career in marine science eventually.
Okay. Okay. Awesome, man. That's so you started going towards the diet. Did you complete all of this in California?
Yeah. So I did my open water dives in Corona Del Mar and my advanced was done at Catalina Island.
And then what about like going pro?
So I actually got a really good experience. I got a really good deal on that. I went to and graduated from University of Hawaii at Hilo with my marine science degree and last May. And through the university, there are scuba diving certifications that you can get. So you can do open water, advanced, rescue, and dive master, which is the first professional certification that you can do. And I lifeguarded at the university, so we got employee discounts. I ended up getting my dive master for $400, which is ridiculously cheap. I think the shop I work at now and every other shop around here charges about $2,100 for that.
Oh, yeah.
it's an expensive cert. So that really kind of enticed me to go towards dive master. I did the dive master internship, which for me, it took about a full semester, so about 5-ish months to do, just because we're only diving on weekends really with like classes and the guided dives, that stuff was on weekends because people have classes during the week. So it took a decent amount of time, but I am really happy that I didn't kind of rush through that. Let me kind of develop as a dive master and set me up for being a good instructor later on. But it was a great deal. Like I couldn't say no to a dive master course for $400. That's insane.
That is absolutely awesome. I'm sure there's going to be some listeners out there that are like, what? Because I'm even like that right now.
We have some really angry people commenting on this.
So Hawaii, did you know, like, as you started going through the work that you wanted to do and you were looking at colleges, was pretty much like Hawaii the only option for you, or were you like, were you dead set on it, or how'd you end up there?
I was pretty dead set on it from pretty early in high school. I knew I wanted to end up here, and I actually ended up at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. So big university in Hawaii on Oahu. That university had probably 20,000 plus students. Oahu is the most populous island. A lot of people, big school, a lot of money involved there. Campus was great. I really enjoyed my time there, but you know, kind of COVID hit. Ended up going back home to California, and UH Hilo actually ended up being a lot better of a fit. It's like 4,000 students. I had field labs where I got to count sea turtles for a grade. Like, it was awesome. I was really happy. So I was dead set on that. I really wanted to do it. And kind of once I started like my dive master, I started diving more here. I met people. I had kind of learned about Kona, which is where I'm currently working and living now. And I had heard about the diving here. I started diving over here more and more, and you know, I loved it. I didn't start doing boat dives here until I started working here, but I'd heard about the manta ray night dives that we do here, which I work at least probably two or three nights a week. And, you know, I'd done some research on them, like top 10 dive in the entire world. So it's like a really well-known dive, and I wanted to do that. So I ended up just moving over to the other side of the island after I graduated, and I started working here.
Okay, awesome, man. And then just remind me again, what did you get a degree in?
So I got my marine science degree from UH Hilo.
Okay. Tell me about what like that whole process, like what was involved with that, the type of work that you were doing to get that degree.
It was a hard degree. I don't love math. I don't love like physics exactly. I can understand them if, you know, I put the work in, which I had to for that degree. You definitely end up having to grind through some of the general ed classes, and then some of the higher level classes also are a bit difficult. But once you start getting into the marine focus classes, it is like the best thing ever. I got to take a sea turtles conservation and ecology class. There was a coral reef ecology class. A few general marine bio classes, there's oceanography classes and labs. So I was doing a good amount of boat work my first semester there. And my oceanography class kind of learned how to like use maps, chart, compass, navigation with boats, all that stuff. And I got in the water a lot for some of these classes. There's a class there where it's called methods, and it is probably one of the worst things I've ever had to do in my life. It was really, really difficult. It's known for being like that last kind of little hump of pain before you graduate. And you go through like pretty much full kind of mini scientific studies, basically. And you'll do field work. You'll collect your data. You have to process your data. And you kind of have to make sense of everything and present a project on it, like a presentation, and write like a full scientific paper. And they set us up to, you know, have a really good career. There was coding involved with R, which is a program that a lot of scientists will use for statistics and stuff, for, you know, graphs, processing tons of data. So like it involved a lot of work, but it was worth it.
And then, so you obviously, you graduated and then decided to stick around Hawaii. Tell me a little bit about what you got going on right now.
So right now I am working at a dive shop called Kona Honu Divers. We were just actually voted the top dive shop in the Pacific by Scuba Diving Magazine, which I thought was pretty cool. I heard that and I was like, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a big deal. So, you know, I'm guiding for this shop right now. I'm working like the morning charters. We got like over 30 sites we'll go check out. I work the manta charters, so I'll take people around the manta site, and then we'll do the manta dive. That's a really fun dive if you ever get the chance to do it. I have taken people down there who have never done night dives before. They're super freaked out and they come up and they're just like crying for joy. I've had a lot of people cry on that dive, actually. They were like, that was amazing. I work there. I guide there. I teach. I'm an instructor there. So I'll teach open water advanced. I took my instructor course in June of last year, like 2 weeks after I graduated, and passed the IE on June 11th. And then I've been teaching since then, taught a good amount of classes here. So I do a lot here. I run social media for the shop as well, like the Instagram, TikTok, all that stuff that is the stuff that I do out there.
So I'm just curious because I'm absolutely horrible with social media. I feel like I'm obviously getting a little bit better, hopefully. But I'm trying to get a little bit better at the social media side of things. So tell me a little bit about what like goes into that, the type of stuff that you're doing. Like, are you just out filming stuff all day and then you make it home and you're putting reels together? Are you, and then finding pictures? Kind of like what is all? Kind of give me some tips. I am not that good at it.
I've been running social media for 3 years now. I had my TikTok account, like my personal account, blow up in February of 2021. So during COVID, I had started an account where I was just kind of posting, talking about conservation stuff. And that ended up growing to 58,000 followers on TikTok. I did a lot of informational videos just talking about conservation, different animals, fun facts, kind of current events, what was going on with the whole conservation world. And 2 years ago, I started running the Project Hue TikTok, which is a nonprofit that Madison Stewart started, which works to convert shark fishermen in Indonesia to tourism. So like you donate to the organization that goes towards paying these fishermen to do tourism and not fish sharks, which is really cool. So I had a good amount of experience kind of going into, you know, running the shop now, and something that I really use. I utilize my personal account to kind of get an idea of trends, like different sounds that I like, just because that is the account that I interact with on Instagram more. I don't really like a ton of videos with the shop account just because like I'm not going around following random people. Like if anything, I'm following brands and other dive shops, organizations, all that stuff. So I am less active, I would say, on that account. So, you know, I'll utilize my personal account to figure out trends, stuff that's going on. Like I said, sounds that I like. And pretty much every day I am working, I'll end up getting GoPro clips of different things. I always have my GoPro clip to my BC. So, you know, if I see a tiger shark swim by, I'll get a cool video of that. If there's dolphins, I'll try to get some videos of that. Manta dive, been able to get some really cool videos of that. I had a video on my shop account, which is the Konohonu Divers account on Instagram, that is almost at like 3 million views right now, I think.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, apparently people didn't realize that manta rays are kind of big, and I had two mantas flying over this guy's head, and these are reef mantas. Two of them were probably like about 9 feet and about 10 feet, so they're big manta rays, and they made this person look tiny, and everybody was commenting, I didn't know that they got this big, which is funny because these are the small mantas that we have here. We have the reef mantas, which are like 12 feet at the biggest, and the oceanics get like up like 28 feet. So I was like, I'm going to tell you this, they get bigger. But yeah, I use a lot of my clips, so I'll just kind of keep stuff going. I work a lot, like I'm working 5-6 days a week, so I'm getting probably like 10 to 12 dives at least a week, I'm like not counting fun dives that I do just on my own. So like I'm always getting clips and content just for posting, and I'll kind of split it up between what I'm posting on my personal account and the shop account. So I'm not just posting like the same stuff everywhere. But that's the trick. Just kind of having your camera on you at every single dive, just waiting to see something.
So a question I like to ask people is that are working in the industry. So you're saying the amount of dives that you're doing per week Is there ever like a burnout stage where you're just kind of like, man, I'm burnt? Or are you still kind of just gung-ho? And if there is a burnout stage, what do you do to combat that?
I do think the burnout is a real thing. I have definitely felt it before. I had a period, I think it was like last month, right? It was 2 months ago now, but I worked 4 days in a row and I did 4 dives a day for each of those days. So I got 16 dives in 4 days and I was exhausted by the end of that stretch. I just, for the entire day, like the next day I had off, I just sat on the couch. I wasn't on my phone. I just completely just relaxed. I didn't do anything just because like my body was sore. My brain was exhausted from talking to people, dealing with people underwater. And basically just whenever I feel like I'm getting burnt out, I will kind of just take a day to relax, let my body recover, let my mind recover, that, like go to the beach, maybe go do a fun dive or something that I don't have to worry about other people. Just so, you know, diving stays fun. I know some people who work in the shop where I'm at and a few people that just, they don't want to become a dive master because they don't want it to feel like work, which
yeah,
sometimes it absolutely does feel like work and I'm just underwater like, God damn it, this sucks right now. So I just like taking a break for a day or two that I have off is huge. Like just maybe not getting in the water for a day or two. Like I said, fun diving, just kind of bringing that joy back. I'll go dive with my girlfriend. I'll go do the harbor dives over here. There's like 30 tiger sharks. Go try to find some of those guys. There's a few manta sites that we'll go check out. So there's a lot to see. The whales are here right now, which is awesome. Been tons of whales around, so it's really important to just kind of take some time and, you know, relax, fun dives, all that stuff.
I always kind of get curious about that because I've had a break from instructing for quite a bit, and oddly enough, so I became an instructor in Texas, and there is quite a bit of diving there, and there's a lot of classes that go, yeah, there's a lot of classes that happen there just because a lot of people, they want to get certified before they go on their vacation. Like, you know, the Mexican Riviera is just a stone's throw away. So a lot of people, I mean, we're a 2-hour flight from Cozumel, Cancun. So a lot of people, they don't want to go there and get certified. They want to get certified before they go there so they can enjoy their dives, enjoy their vacation. So we would work through the summer and just, I would definitely feel the burnout by the end of summer. So I'm always kind of like, how do people combat that? But my next question that I wanted to ask is kind of on the conservation side of things. So you were saying on your account, you would post conservation stuff. Did you focus in a certain area or was it just kind of general knowledge across the board?
It mainly started out with just shark conservation. So I had made a good amount of videos on different shark species, fun facts about them. Shark finning was probably the biggest thing that I posted about for a while. I had posted about some of the shark fishing tournaments that go around in the US. I got away with a lot of pictures on TikTok that like you can't really post now. So I got pretty lucky that you're able to do that because like I had posted pictures of some of the finning and some of the shark fishing that was on there. Some pretty gnarly looking pictures sometimes. And it wasn't designed to be like a shock factor, like this is shark fishing and that's it. Like I would provide information on what's going on, kind of why it's wrong, kind of some of the shark laws in the US that are a little bit not so great, how that kind of relates to the shark fishing here. A lot of fun facts just about sharks to kind of gauge interest in them, but also talk about the issues that they're facing pretty much. And then once my account blew up, I kind of realized that I could do a lot more than just talk about sharks. Even though I loved them, I wanted to, you know, talk about different animals, like other marine mammals, sea turtles, different reptiles, like all of that stuff. There's a lot more to talk about just in the conservation industry. So kind of for me, focusing on sharks, it was fun and I loved it. But once I realized I could tell more people about the ocean, kind of, I think the mission grew a little bit bigger.
Okay. Well, I'm actually just curious because, so obviously I know the shark finning industry. I guess I don't really know about it. Is it a big problem in the United States?
The finning isn't so much a big problem here. It happens. They passed the Shark Fin Sales Elimination Act last year, which prevents the sale of fins in the U.S. And I don't believe that the act of actually finning a shark is illegal yet. Hawaii was the most recent state, and I want to say the strongest state for shark protections, that it is illegal to kill a shark for any reason. It's illegal to catch them. Obviously, mistakes happen, and you can't, you know, tell what's going to bite your line, but you're not allowed to go fishing for sharks. You're not allowed to kill them, harm them in any way. You're not allowed to fin them here. So the sharks here are very, very protected. What a lot of people will do in states like Florida, they will catch sharks, go really far offshore, and they'll fin them, and they'll bring them back. And
oh, no shit.
Yeah, not great. But the Shark Fin Sales Elimination Act was federal, and it's a federal law. So that was a really good step. There's still more to do with that, and kind of just banning finning in the U.S. entirely. But the finning is more of like an international thing. It happens in other countries, and that is still very, very destructive for sharks. So it was the bycatch and like commercial fishing, like all the trawling that people do and those big nets that they catch, kind of indiscriminatory in what they catch. So like a lot of like manta ray, sea turtle, sharks, different stuff will get caught in those nets. You can't really pick and choose what you catch.
Okay. So what are some of the other problems that sharks face kind of in, I guess I don't want to say the continental U.S., but probably like what are some other, because I know fishing, because I'm not going to lie, I hate when I see the videos of someone just on a pier, they catch a shark or whatever, and then they're just kind of, you know, showing it off. And it's like, that's not really anything to show off. But like, what are other issues that they're facing on a conservation level?
In the U.S., the shark fishing's big. The finning has definitely gone down. But like even in Florida, I've seen a lot of posts where people are saying sharks are overpopulated. And you'll actually find sharks in Florida now that have gunshots in them, like bullet holes in their heads and their bodies. People are just shooting them just because they don't like sharks. They think the sharks are taking their fish. A lot of fishermen have been frustrated and like they'll shoot sharks with like pistols because people think sharks are taking too many fish. They've been granted more protections, and a lot of people for some reason don't like that, which I think is a little bit crazy because we need sharks. Like the fish that you like catching, if sharks are not there, that fish isn't going to be there that much longer either. It's a whole ecosystem thing if there are no sharks. So people don't really understand that yet, which is unfortunate, which is why education is really important. Yeah, those are still probably some of the biggest things. Just the fear of sharks as well is a really big contributor to that. A lot of these new like shark horror movies that come out, like 47 Meters Down, is just a horrible movie. Like the whole diving side of that movie just pisses me off, let alone the shark stuff. But people watch these movies and, you know, they think the second they step foot in the ocean, like a shark's gonna come eat them. So I think it turns a lot of people off from the conservation of sharks and really contributing to that. And people don't understand the importance because of that, which I think is one of the other biggest issues for sharks here. And then, I mean, the long lining, which is not great. So big commercial fishing industry is still definitely a problem.
Long lining? What is that?
So just when like fishing boats, like they'll deploy like these really long lines, and it's called long lining, but they kind of deploy these lines out in hopes to catch, you know, big fish, commercial fish that for that fishing industry. And I mean, sharks will get caught on accident in those lines. They'll pull them up, and different species of sharks handle stress better than others. Hammerhead sharks are one of the worst species to handle stress. I want to say it was a percentage. It was like a 40% or more mortality rate for hammerheads after being caught. And like those videos you were talking about on the beach when people take a picture with those hammerheads or something, I want to say it was about a 40%, 40 to 50% chance that shark is actually going to die after getting released because of that stress of getting caught. So,
damn,
like the long lining, different trawling. So there's big nets, like I said, that would kind of pull up a bunch of fish, you know, find dead sharks in there again, just because you cannot decide what is going to swim into that net.
Man, I fucking hate hearing that shit, dude. That sucks, man. And it sucks too, just because it's like, it's there is so much, a lot of people are just uneducated about the whole situation. And I'll even admit, before I got into diving, like, I didn't know much, you know, so it's just a bummer that that stuff still goes on. Definitely need to try to get the word out more. On a conservation level, what would you say is, you know, is there something that is lacking a voice that needs more of a voice? You know, like, should we bring more awareness to this situation? Like, what would you say?
I think that sharks just need stronger protection at the federal level in the U.S. Like, individual protections would be perfect for different species, or just adding them to the endangered species list and just really trying to protect sharks in general. Because the Shark Fin Sales Elimination Act was great, but it does not stop people from killing sharks, harvesting sharks, I mean, finning sharks. Like, it doesn't stop people from doing that. Mako sharks, short fin Mako sharks, are internationally recognized as endangered by the IUCN. And you're allowed to catch and kill them in the U.S., which,
oh shit,
I don't think, even if populations are healthy in the U.S., that's great. I personally don't think that it's a good idea to catch and kill an endangered species, an internationally endangered species, where they have healthy populations. Because if that goes on for too long, those might no longer be healthy populations after a long enough time. So I think people kind of need to push for, you know, stronger protections now for sharks. And I mean, I think it should be federally illegal for people to kill them just for no reason or fin them. Like, those are not written laws yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No shit, man. So in other species, what kind of conservation work are you like trying to highlight? Like, is there, I mean, obviously there's always and don't get me wrong, I'll love it to the end of time, but the saving turtles, you know, is always kind of a big one out there. But is there other species that you're highlighting, speaking about, or want to speak about?
Yeah. So on like my personal Instagram, I've been doing a good amount of videos on dolphins and some of the captivity issues they've been facing. And he's kind of trying to bring awareness to that. I've gotten really, really lucky to have some pretty good dolphin interactions the past few months working here in Kona. Had a mom and a baby bottlenose, not like super small, but it was a good size. Bottlenose are big dolphins. It was my first time seeing them underwater. And it was, the mom was probably like 8-9 feet long. She's massive. I had these two bottlenoses that came up to us and just kind of swam around us, stared at us. One of the mom breached right above us. It was some of the best dolphin videos I've ever gotten. And I recently got, tried to start pairing some of these videos, these really cool interactions with good messages about the captivity situations with dolphins, and kind of highlighting, like, this is what dolphins are supposed to look like in the wild. Like, this is not what you see at SeaWorld, but, you know, this is what you're going to see in the ocean. If you're patient, you wait for it, you don't pay to go to SeaWorld, it's a lot more rewarding of an interaction. And I just kind of wanted to pair a good video with a good message.
Actually, it reminds me of a, someone showed me a Reddit post the other day of someone went to, I think it's like, one of the aquariums in the U.S. and I can't remember which aquarium, but, and there might be only one that had a whale shark in it. And then there was a lot of hatred towards the person that went to go dive with the whale shark. And I felt kind of bad for the person, because I just don't think they knew the reality of the situation. But what are your thoughts on these big aquariums that hold, I mean, obviously I don't think a whale shark should be in an aquarium. I feel like it's too small, but I don't know. Cause one side of it I've heard is sometimes these are rehabilitation centers in these aquariums before they're let out in the wild again? Is there truth to that? Or, you know, like what are your whole thoughts on kind of these bigger aquariums?
I think a good rule of thumb for kind of at least the cetacean stuff and dolphins, there are facilities out there that do good work and they do rehabilitate dolphins. And the reality is some of those might not be able to be released. But I think the difference between a good facility and a bad facility is if they're forcing these rehabilitated dolphins to do shows and tricks and all that stuff, I don't think that's great. I don't think that's a great facility right there. That's not the point of rehabilitating them and having them in captivity. It's to, you know, get them back to health. It's not to say, oh, this dolphin needs to be rescued. Now we can put it to work and doing shows for people. Like that's not the point. There are facilities that focus on the rehabilitation, which, you know, that's great. I don't know how. I think it's a Georgia aquarium that is the ones keeping whale sharks. I think I've heard that they have had trouble keeping them because they've gotten so big and they've run into the glass, which is not great for them. They don't have a lot of space to move. Whale sharks, I mean, normally are able to go like open ocean, very deep. They're able to swim all over the place. So it's very different for them to live there, and there, you know, are struggles with that.
So that's why I always kind of wonder, and I think now I'll be honest, there was a point in time where there was a trip. Yeah, the Georgia Aquarium, that there was a trip, and early on in my diving career, I was like, oh man, that would be kind of cool, which I'm really glad that I didn't now, because I don't want to promote or participate in that sort of stuff. And I definitely feel like there's a need to educate people more, especially when they get into diving, because you might not know. You're just like, oh, cool, this is awesome, I can go do. But the dolphin captivity, you know, obviously there's the SeaWorld type stuff. Is that a pretty big problem in the world, or just the U.S., or is it a pretty big problem in general?
So right now there are three countries that will actively like still kill dolphins and whales: in Faroe Islands, Norway, and Japan. I mean, Japan, like the Red Cove in Taiji, is really bad. There's a documentary called The Cove, which is by the Dolphin Project. They kind of highlighted a lot of the really terrible things that go on there. I mean, just like how they treat dolphins. They either kill the dolphins for meat, hundreds of dolphins and whales and stuff, like tons of them. And they'll keep little ones for captivity, and they'll sell those off to aquariums around the world. In the U.S., they have been cracking down on that. I want to say, at least for SeaWorld and some of the other big facilities, they're not able to get new orcas and dolphins. I don't know about captive breeding programs and how that works there exactly, but I know they're not able to pull any more from the wild to get new animals. In terms of like dolphins and orcas. So that, I mean, that was a big blow to them. And recently the Miami Seaquarium was another place that had capped dolphins and killer whales. And they had had some really, really just terrible conditions and incidents of their animals dying. And I mean, just dying out of nowhere as well. So the county there actually denied to renew their lease with that Seaquarium. So I am not totally sure what's going to happen next with that, but the U.S. has been taking steps with that. Internationally, I am a bit less familiar with kind of steps on reducing the cetacean captivity. I know it does happen internationally, and I mean, there are still captive dolphins and orcas all over the U.S., but I think the future of that industry has definitely been shrunken by laws and regulations have been passed, and even public image. I think I like to think that less people go to a lot of these facilities based on, you know, some of the documentaries that are out there now and a lot of the stuff on social media that's out there now.
And I think even too, there's a big thing going on with social media and politics right now, but because there is the good and the bad, obviously, right? And I do find that this is obviously one of the really great things about social media, is to be able to get the word out, to give people the voice, to get those images out, to kind of stop these things. So it's such a bummer, like the social media, literally the double-edged sword. So that's awesome that, you know, through social media, we're getting this word out to kind of protect and, you know, give these species a fighting chance, essentially, because if nobody's speaking up for them, people are just going to keep doing what they're doing. Just to kind of change the subject a little bit, take me through like a typical day of diving in Hawaii. Like, so what water temperatures? Obviously, you've named some of the cool stuff that you could see. Because to be honest, I've heard that Hawaii is actually quite cold. And actually, hold on real quick. I do have a question before you answer that. So when I say Hawaii, am I pronouncing it wrong, or is it Hawaii?
There's different ways you can kind of pronounce it. Hawaiian, in the Hawaiian language, the W's are kind of pronounced like V's. And then the Okina, which is, it looks like an apostrophe, kind of separates, it breaks up the sound. So, and you could say Hawaii or Hawaii. I mean, either way, I think it's kind of acceptable.
Okay.
It's like the official way is to pronounce that W as a V, but like Hawaii is not, I wouldn't say it's much of a correct way to pronounce it. I mean, I've lived here for over 3 years, so, you know, I think if you're going to be here, you got to be respectful, try to kind of learn the language, the culture, and, you know, contribute to all that stuff. I think that's an important part of being here.
So I've been saying it wrong my whole
life. I mean, not everybody knows that, though, because not a lot of people know that, but not a lot of people exactly care to know that or kind of learn more about the language and learn about that, which I think everybody should do that. It's important, especially if you're going to be visiting here.
Yeah. So Hawaii, that's how you should say it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah, because I always wonder, and I'm like, okay, and I know it's, and I hate to use this analogy, but tomato, whatever. But I feel like when I speak to people that have lived there or from there, they'll pronounce it different, and then I'm just like, oh, you know, it's yeah. So I'm just learning something new every day.
Yeah, honestly, the best, like a really good way to do it is, I mean, just like meet people that, you know, from here, like local Hawaiians. At UH Hilo, I got really lucky that I got to meet a lot of people that were from the Big Island and from some of the other main islands here. And I mean, I got to meet people from like Micronesia, Samoa, Marshall Islands, Solomon Island, like there's all these different islands. So there's a huge mixing pot of different cultures, different Polynesian cultures, which are, no, really, really cool to learn about. And like a lot of my friends who kind of individually teach me about those cultures. So, you know, you get to learn a lot, which is really cool.
So, yeah, tell me about the typical day of diving in Hawaii.
So, like,
I'm trying.
No, you're doing good. So, like, for a morning charter, you know, call time is 6:45 at the shop. You got to get there, load tanks. You got to get customer gear. You got to get your gear. Kind of any of the boat needs. We do a ratio of 6 guests per guide. So, you know, if there's a boat of 18 people, you're going to have 3 guides, like 12, you're going to have 2. Whoever's working that day, we'll get to the shop. We'll get the whole truck loaded up. And Honokahau Harbor is the harbor that we operate out of, which is like a 10-minute drive from the shop. So we'll get there, unload all the tanks on the boat, hand the manifest to the captain. We'll get everybody situated, tanks set up, gear set up, and we'll get everybody on the boat, and we'll head out to our site. And we don't pick sites beforehand. We'll look at conditions, pick the best spot to go based on what we think the day is going to end up looking like. And wintertime, right now, we've been hit with like back-to-back-to-back-to-back swells, like big swells, huge winds. So we had a lot of cancellations this past month, which was really, like, on the scale that it was very unusual. Does not happen like that a lot. Wintertime, you know, sites, we get a little bit more limited sometimes based on what conditions look like. Water gets colder. It's like 74, 75 degrees right now. Summer, it's probably 80 182. Like it's a good deal warmer. I'm in a 7 mil wetsuit with a hooded vest right now and 5 mil boots, and I'm freezing on these dives, but we'll we'll go out, we'll moor up to a mooring and do that first dive, go check the whole site out. I've done like 80-minute dives on some of these. Sometimes it could be a lot shorter. Like I've had someone blow through 3,400 PSI in 12 minutes.
Oh, shit.
That was impressive. I've only seen that like three times, but I was like, dude, how much air do you have? I had to ask twice. Yeah, we'll do that. I'll get a mix of divers. We're at Kona Honu, we're really organized about how we set up people with each guide. So we'll kind of go like up to three groups, and we try to organize it based on experience. So if we can set one guide up to have all the most experienced people, and then the second most experienced people with another guide, and some of the newer divers with another guide, we kind of do it like that. So it's the best experience for each of those groups of divers, so that everybody's kind of on the same experience level, and you don't have somebody with 1,000 dives having to, go dive with someone who it's their fifth dive out of their cert. It's like first dive out of their cert. They don't know what the heck they're doing yet. So I mean, we do it like that so we can kind of tailor to each diver's needs. And, we'll pair some with the newer divers who, can help make them better, help them dive safer. And I mean, even if you're not teaching, when you are diving with newer divers, you're going to end up teaching. Like there's going to be lessons that you're going to have to kind of pass down. But yeah, we organize it really nicely. We'll do two dives. We'll leave that site, check out a second site, and then we'll head back to the harbor. On the harbor, like 30 resident tiger sharks around there. So we'll look for tigers on the way back in. There was a super pod of spinner dolphins out yesterday. So there's probably a few hundred spinner dolphins right near the harbor. It was insane. Lots of life around the harbor. It's one of my favorite dive sites, actually, right there. Great spot to see tiger sharks, eagle rays. I've seen mantas there before.
No shit.
Frogfish. We have Commerson's frogfish or giant frogfish. There's a few out here. Dragon morays. Like just awesome stuff. And then manta charters, which I also work, is, like I said, like top 10 dive in the world. It's a really, really popular dive. You'll get there. That's a later dive. Like you would get to the harbor at maybe 3:15, which is our time right now. We kind of adjust it based on when the sun sets. It starts setting a little bit later right now. So we'll do a afternoon dive. So we'll do a dive before the manta, which you kind of check out the whole site. It's kind of the same process. Like you load up the truck, get to the harbor. That's a 30-minute drive out. So right now what we're doing is, we'll go on the drive out, but pretty much every time I've seen whales on the way out. So we'll kind of whale watch a little bit on the way out. We'll do that with the morning charters as well. Had some massive breaches, fluke slaps, peck slaps, just like whales all over the place. So that's been one of my favorite parts of winter time. It's like those boat rides out with the whales is just, it's insane. We'll get there. We do an afternoon dive. So I think the two tank dives at that site really nice, because you got to check out the whole site. There's a lot to see, a lot of life, lots of really cool animals. And the manta dive is, you go sit there, you swim to the site, which is like a big circle we call the campfire. We'll sit you down, and then you just sit. All you have to do is sit and watch manta rays for like 45 minutes. It's the easiest, best night dive you will ever do. Like, it's a great first night dive. It's a great night dive for advanced people, just because it's so easy. And I want to say I worked the manta dive last night, and we had, what did we have? We had 23 mantas at one time.
Damn.
And a few weeks ago, we had 41 at one time. It was,
no shit.
That was crazy. I was dodging mantas left and right. It's really, so we have these campfire lights. It's like these big, we call them can lights, and they're 33,000 lumen lights. So we'll set those down and we'll face them up. That brings the plankton, and the mantas are sweeping right over the tops of those lights to eat the plankton. At the end of the night, though, we have to turn those lights back to we turn them onto a red setting on the way there and back, so we're not drawing the mantas with us back to the boat. But I have to go grab this light and turn it back to red, and I mean, if there's 41 mantas at a time, chances are there's going to be like four or five or more dive bombing that light at one time. So I'm like constantly looking around, avoiding them. I got smacked in the head a few nights ago by like a 10-foot manta. It hurts. It hurts really bad. I'm just like grabbing the light, and next thing I know, I got bounced off the sand by a manta. Yeah, that does not feel good. I got dribbled. Yeah, that was not.
Oh man,
it gets scary. That's the only part of that dive that like really scares me is the mantas.
That sounds like an awesome dive, though. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a fun dive. They're playful. They're not gonna hurt you. They'll get really close to people, and they're pretty big. But sometimes they're just a little bit clumsy. It's kind of the only thing.
Well, awesome, man. So I just have one final question before I let you go. So someone that is a newer diver and they want to get into conservation work, they want to help the cause with so many different avenues, what can they do to help out? What can they do to get involved? What can they do?
I mean, now social media is such a big part of this. There is so many people and organizations that you can find through social media. You can reach out to people. I mean, just ask organizations for ways to volunteer. Different people, ask them how they got where they are. If they work for a certain nonprofit, they work for a dive shop. Lots of dive shops are kind of working with nonprofits and like ocean cleanups as well. So there's a lot of different avenues that you can start to get into stuff, whether it's through social media. Look for local nonprofits, even start doing your own beach cleanups. I know people who have, you know, built like social media followings off of beach cleanups, and then more and more and more people have started joining those. And that's just like something that I know some people in Maryland who have started doing that. And now they have like 20 people coming to beach cleanups and they pick up trash. So, you know, if there aren't already established places that you can volunteer or work at, like, start doing your own thing.
Well, Max, man, I absolutely appreciate you coming onto the podcast today, man. This has been super insightful, and I'm always happy to hear, or not, I don't want to say happy, but it's always nice to hear more of what we could do and just kind of the work that needs to be done. So thank you very much for coming onto the podcast today, man.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. It was awesome.
Off-gassing, a scuba podcast.